All right, so get this. We're diving into a world where fire and life, they kind of collide.
Okay.
And the results, not always what you'd think. Like, you know how after a wildfire rips through a forest, you often see like this burst of new growth.
It's like nature's hitting the reset button, right?
Exactly. But what if I told you that those fires, especially on land that's been cleared, for timber, could actually be bad news for those essential pollinators we rely on.
Yeah.
Like, those busy bees and those beautiful
Oh,
butterflies.
that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's where things get really interesting. This deep dive that we're doing today is based on research from Sweden
Okay.
and published in 2020 in the journal Forest Ecology and Management. And it focuses on this massive wildfire. We're talking over 32,000 acres of pine forest.
Wow, that's
Yeah,
huge.
and its impact on pollinators.
So they compared those burned areas to similar areas that were untouched by the fire.
Exactly. And all of these areas had been recently clear-cut for timber, so they were already in a state of regrowth. The researchers wanted to understand, how would fire affect that process?
So what did they find? Did the fire just wipe everything out?
Well, it wasn't quite that simple. The first thing they noticed was a dramatic change in the types of plants growing in the burned areas. Imagine walking through an unburned forest and seeing a carpet of blueberries and lingonberries, those classic boreal forest dwarf shrubs.
Oh, yeah.
Now, picture that same area after the fire, and it's dominated by fireweed, birch, and aspen trees.
So it's not just about what burns, it's about what comes back afterwards.
Right.
Yeah, like a whole new ecosystem kind of emerged from the ashes.
Exactly. And this shift in plant communities had a ripple effect on the pollinators that rely on those plants.
Yeah.
Think about it. If you're a butterfly that's adapted to feeding on a specific type of wildflower,
Yeah.
and suddenly that wildflower is gone, you're in trouble.
Right. It's like, going to your favorite restaurant and finding out it's been replaced with something completely different. You might still be hungry, but it's not what you were hoping for.
That's a great analogy. And that's exactly what happened to many of the butterflies in this study. Researchers saw a significant decrease in butterfly diversity and abundance in the burned areas.
How significant are we talking? Was it just a slight dip or something more dramatic?
Hold on tight, because this is where it gets heartbreaking.
Okay.
They found a 67% drop in butterfly species richness and a whopping 89% drop in their abundance on the burned land.
Wow.
Essentially, the butterflies vanished from those burned clear cuts.
Oh, those are devastating numbers. So the fire essentially created butterfly ghost towns.
Yeah.
That's incredibly sad. Do we know why the butterflies were hit so hard?
Well, butterflies are particularly vulnerable to habitat changes because they often rely on very specific plants for both food and as host plants for their caterpillars. When those plants disappear or are replaced by different species, the butterflies simply can't survive.
So it's all about specialization. They've evolved to thrive in a particular niche, and when that niche is disrupted, they struggle to adapt. It makes sense, but it's still incredibly disheartening to hear.
It is. It's a stark reminder of how interconnected everything is in an ecosystem. What happens to one species can have cascading effects on others.
So, if the butterflies were hit so hard, what about other pollinators like bees, wasps, and hoverflies? Did they fare any better?
They did fare somewhat better, but fire still had a noticeable impact on their populations. While the overall numbers were down, the types of bees, wasps, and hoverflies found in the burned areas were different from those in the unburned areas.
So it's not just about the total number of pollinators, but also the composition of those communities.
Right.
It's like the fire shuffled the deck, so to speak, changing who was present and in what numbers.
Exactly. And this shift in community composition suggests that even those pollinators that are considered more adaptable and resilient are still feeling the effects of the fire.
Okay, so fire creates winners and losers, even among those seemingly tough pollinators. But what's driving those changes? Is it just a matter of which plants survive the fire, or is there more to it?
That's a great question, and it's something the researchers explored in detail. They looked at how different factors, like burn severity and the types of plants present, influenced pollinator communities.
Burn severity makes sense. You'd think a hotter fire would have a more significant impact, but how do you even measure something like burn severity?
Well, they measured it by looking at something called humus depth, which is essentially how deep the fire burned into the soil.
Okay.
You'd think the deeper the burn, the worse the impact on the plants and insects,
Oh,
right?
that seems logical.
Yeah.
So, what did they find? Did burn severity neatly predict which plants and pollinators would thrive?
Here's where it gets a little surprising. They found that burn severity, as measured by humus depth, wasn't always a good predictor of which plants or pollinators would do well.
Huh.
There's clearly a much more complex interplay of factors at work here.
Wow, so it's not just about how hot the fire gets. It seems like there's a whole ecological puzzle to solve here.
Exactly. And that's what makes this research so fascinating. It's challenging our assumptions about how fire impacts ecosystems and reminding us that there's still so much we don't know.
Well, this is already shaping up to be a fascinating deep dive.
Yeah.
I'm eager to learn more about those intricate relationships between fire, plants, and pollinators.
Me too. And in the next part of our deep dive, we'll delve into the specific species that were affected by the fire and explore those winners and losers in more detail.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. All right. So we've set the stage. A massive wildfire in Sweden, clear-cut forests, and a dramatic shift in the types of plants growing back.
Yeah.
Now, let's zoom in on those specifics. What kind of plants thrived in those unburned areas?
Think of a classic Scandinavian landscape, you know, rolling hills covered in pine forests, with this lush understory of bilberry and lingonberry, you know, those iconic dwarf shrubs.
Oh, yeah.
The unburned clear-cuts were also teeming with grasses like the Champsia flexuosa, creating a diverse ground cover.
Sounds idyllic, you know, a perfect haven for pollinators.
It was. But after the fire, the scene changed, like dramatically.
Oh.
It's like a botanical game of musical chairs. Fireweed swoops in, along with birch and aspen trees.
Okay.
These species are known for their ability to, like, quickly colonize disturbed areas.
Uh-huh.
But they aren't necessarily the best for the pollinators who were originally there.
So it's not just about having more plants. It's about having the right plants.
Right.
Kind of like a picky eater at a buffet.
Yeah.
There might be tons of food, but if it's not to their liking, they're going hungry.
Exactly. And that's what happened to many of the butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that 89% drop in abundance?
Yeah.
Well, the researchers identified 7 butterfly species that were significantly associated with the unburned clear-cuts, but completely absent from the burned areas.
Oh, wow. So name names, which butterfly species were hit the hardest?
Some of the missing butterflies included the ringlet, the pearl-bordered fritillary, and the green hairstreak. Imagine a world without the flutter of these beautiful creatures.
It's a sobering thought, and it all goes back to that idea of specialization, right? These butterflies are so adapted to feeding on specific plants that they can't easily switch to something new, even if it's abundant.
Exactly. It's a reminder that even seemingly small changes in plant communities can have, like, outsized consequences for these delicate creatures.
All right. So butterflies are struggling. What about the bees, wasps, and hoverflies? You mentioned they fared somewhat better.
Yes, their populations were less affected. But even within these groups, there were winners and losers.
Okay.
For example, the researchers identified 8 bee species that were strongly associated with the unburned areas.
Oh, okay.
Like Engraena fulvida, Bombus leucorum, Bombus pertorum, and Hylaeus angustatus.
Those are some pretty diverse bee species.
Absolutely. It highlights how even within a single group, like bees, there's this wide range of ecological preferences and tolerances. Some bees are generalists, happy to forage on a variety of flowers, while others are specialists, relying on a limited number of plant species.
So the fire essentially created a new playing field, favoring those bees that were more adaptable to the changed conditions.
What about the wasps?
Similar story. The study found 6 wasp species, including Arachnospilus spisa, Oplopus carbonarius, and Dipogon bifasciatus, that were much more common in the unburned areas.
Okay.
Again, it suggests that even these seemingly resilient groups are feeling the impact of the fire.
And let's not forget the hoverflies.
Of course. They play a crucial role in pollination, too.
Yeah.
The researchers found 2 species, Anisimia idropunculundulata and Sericomia salentis, associated with the unburned clear-cuts, while 1 species, Xylota jacatorum, was linked to the burned areas.
So even among the hoverflies, there are species that thrive in those post-fire environments. It's like the fire created new opportunities for some, while others struggled to adapt.
That's a great way to put it. It's all about ecological niches and finding the right fit.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the researchers measured burn severity, but it wasn't always a good predictor of how well a species would do. Were there any other factors that seemed to play a role in these post-fire changes?
Well, remember how we talked about the increase in deadwood after the fire?
Uh-huh.
Both standing dead trees and fallen logs were more abundant in the burned areas.
Right.
This might seem like a negative thing, but it actually created a boon for certain species.
Ah, so it's like the silver linings we sometimes find in unexpected places. Who benefited from this increase in deadwood?
Well, think about it. Deadwood provides shelter, nesting sites, and food sources for a variety of insects.
Yeah.
For example, the study found that 3 bee species, Lasioglossum leucopis, Bombus pascorum, and Bombus oroensis were actually more abundant in the burned areas, likely because they utilized deadwood for nesting or larval development.
So these bees are like the ultimate recyclers, turning something that seems dead and useless into a valuable resource.
Exactly. It's a reminder that what might seem like a negative consequence at first glance can actually be a benefit for certain species.
It's like nature's way of turning lemons into lemonade.
Yeah.
Did any of the wasps or hoverflies take advantage of this deadwood bonanza?
We did. Three wasp species, Ammophila sabulosa, Nisan trimaculatus, and Tripoxylon medium, were associated with the burned areas, likely because they also used deadwood for nesting.
Okay.
And remember that hoverfly species, Zelota jacatorum?
Yeah.
Many hoverflies, including this one, rely on decaying wood for their larvae to develop.
It's amazing how nature finds a way to create opportunities, even in the aftermath of destruction.
Yeah.
So we're seeing this complex interplay of fire, plants, and pollinators, with some species thriving while others struggle.
Right.
But I'm curious, is this just a temporary blip in the ecological timeline, or are these changes likely to be more long-lasting?
That's a crucial question, and it's one of the limitations of this study. Mm. Remember, they only looked at things 3 years after the fire.
Okay.
It's like taking a snapshot of a movie.
Yeah.
You get a glimpse of what's happening, but you miss the larger story.
So we're seeing the early stages of ecological recovery, but we don't know the full plot yet.
Right.
Will butterfly populations rebound? Will those bee and wasp communities stabilize? Or will they continue to shift?
Exactly. Those are questions that only long-term monitoring can answer. But this study provides a valuable baseline,
yep,
a starting point for understanding how fire shapes these ecosystems.
Okay, so we've got a snapshot, but the movie is still playing. What are the broader implications of this research? What does it tell us about how we should manage forests, especially in a world where wildfires are becoming more frequent and intense?
That's a great question, and one we'll delve into in the final part of our deep dive.
So we've seen how fire can, like, reshape an ecosystem, creating these winners and losers among the plants and pollinators that call it home.
Yeah.
But what does this all mean for us? Like, how can we use this knowledge to better manage our forests, especially as wildfires are becoming increasingly common?
Well, it's a crucial question. And I think this study offers some valuable insights. First and foremost, it underscores the importance of heterogeneity in forest management.
Heterogeneity, you mean like a mixed bag of different types of habitats?
Exactly. Think of it like a well-balanced diet. We wouldn't want to eat just one type of food all the time. Right.
Right.
We need variety to stay healthy.
Yeah.
It's the same with ecosystems. If we want to support a diversity of species, we need a diversity of habitats.
So we need to ensure there's like a mosaic of different forest types, including areas that have been recently burned, areas that have been left untouched for longer periods, and everything in between.
Absolutely. That means not only protecting unburned areas,
right,
but also being strategic about prescribed burns. We can use fire as a tool to create those patches of burned and unburned areas, mimicking the natural fire regimes that many ecosystems have evolved with.
So fire itself isn't necessarily the enemy.
Right.
It's all about how we manage it.
Precisely. And that means thinking about burn severity, the timing of burns, and the overall landscape context. We need to make sure that there are refuges for those species that are sensitive to fire, like those butterflies we talked about.
Right.
And that those refuges are connected so the populations can recover and recolonize over time.
It sounds like we need to shift our thinking from fire suppression to fire management. Instead of trying to eliminate fire altogether, which is often impossible anyway,
right,
we need to learn to live with it and use it to our advantage.
Exactly. And that requires a deeper understanding of how fire interacts with different ecosystems.
Yeah.
We need to know which species benefit from fire, which species are harmed by it, and how we can create landscapes that support a diverse array of life in the face of these disturbances.
So this research is like a roadmap,
yeah,
guiding us toward a more sustainable approach to forest management. But you mentioned earlier that this study only provides a snapshot in time. What kind of long-term research is needed to fill in the gaps in our knowledge?
Well, imagine if we could revisit those burned areas in 10, 20, even 50 years. We could track how the plant communities continue to change, whether those butterfly populations rebound, and how the bee and wasp communities evolve over time.
It would be like watching that ecological movie unfold.
All right.
Seeing how the plot twists and turns over the decades.
Exactly. And those long-term studies are essential if we want to develop truly effective forest management strategies.
Yeah.
We need to understand not just the immediate impacts of fire, but also the long-term consequences for biodiversity and ecosystem function.
It's fascinating to think about how these ecosystems are constantly changing, adapting, and evolving in response to fire. It's a reminder that nature is dynamic, not static.
And that dynamism is what makes nature so resilient. Even in the face of seemingly catastrophic events like wildfires, life finds a way to persist, adapt, and even thrive.
Well, this has been an incredibly eye-opening deep dive into the world of post-wildfire ecosystems. I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on fire, its role in nature, and the challenges and opportunities it presents for forest management.
Me too. And I hope our listeners have come away with a newfound appreciation for the complexity and resilience of these incredible ecosystems.
Absolutely. So what's the final takeaway message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the most important thing to remember is that fire is a natural part of many ecosystems, and understanding that natural cycle is crucial for preserving the biodiversity of our planet.
Great point. It's not about fearing fire, but about respecting it and learning to live with it in a way that benefits both humans and the natural world.
Exactly. And I'd like to leave our listeners with one final thought to ponder. This study focused on a very specific type of forest, pine-dominated clearcuts.
Okay.
But what would happen in other types of forests, say those with more deciduous trees or older, more complex forests? How might the impact of wildfires differ in those ecosystems?
Ooh, that's a great question. It makes me want to dive into more research and explore those nuances further.
Me too. It highlights how much more there is to discover about fire and its role in shaping our world.
Well, on that note, we'll leave you to ponder the mysteries of nature and the power of fire. Thanks for joining us on this fascinating deep dive. We'll catch you next time.